I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Welcome to On the Continent, your one-stop podcast for all things European football. I'm Dotun Adebayo.
I'm Andy Brassel.
And I'm David Cartledge.
On today's podcast, now we all know what Lionel Messi earns, does Barca have 555 million reasons to blame their troubles on him? Ooh la la, as the French love to say, je pense donc je suis. But what on earth are they thinking of now that none of their broadcasters want to shell out for this season's football rights? And how much will it cost us? And after beating their bitter Lisbon rivals, Sporting fans are getting ready to sing Campeones, 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 Campeones. But do they need to keep the Porto on ice for now? So, David and Andy, last week we were talking about Marseille's troubles. And I don't know if you were looking in your crystal ball, Andy, but you will know that Marseille's troubles have reached another crescendo.
Yeah, I didn't quite imagine 100 fans breaking into the training ground and chucking stuff at the players and the coach. André Villas-Boas going, that is something that perhaps wouldn't have needed a crystal ball or even really that much knowledge of French football. He's been on the brink for a little while, and obviously he made it a pretty tough first day in the job for Olivier Ncham by saying he never wanted him in the first place, and I'm sure Ncham was pretty glad to see him go. And then of course they went to Lens on Wednesday night under new management and turned a 2-0 halftime lead into a draw, and they were lucky to hang on to that. So look, you can't take your eye off them for a second.
Is that the reason, though? Is the draw that should have been a victory, was that the reason that Villas-Boas left, or was it the whole sort of turmoil around the club?
Well, he said it was because of the Ncham signing that he didn't ask for, he didn't sign off on. And in his words, I woke up the next morning and read about it in the newspaper. But it's been building for a long time. The tension around them not getting good results in the Champions League, I think that wounded his pride quite irreparably, really, as we touched on last week. And things have been boiling since then. It was clear that he wasn't going to stay beyond the end of his contract at the end of the season. The players talked him into staying at the start of this season, and the players didn't like him anymore. So I think that was really what got us to this point. And yeah, he looks like a man in need of a sabbatical at the moment.
I really liked his line as well, where he said, I really liked Marseille, but I'm professional.
So where does his professionalism take him to now? And what about Marseille? They're liked, they're loved, but how can they come back from this position, David?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I think in regards to AVB, he's probably going to end up kayaking or something, or popping up at the Olympics in some strange event, you know, knowing him. But, you know, he is a professional after all, so there are other sports I think of. But in terms of Marseille, I still think they've got a nice squad there. They've got, you know, I think they're in a good place. They aren't exactly in turmoil in terms of the squad, the personnel, what they have. It was just this situation with AVB that has clearly been problematic. So I think they can continue to kick on. And obviously the Marseille fans are a raucous bunch. I think they will always be like the way they are. They're a very passionate fan base, and that shouldn't be, they shouldn't take away any of that. But yeah, I think they're in a good position overall.
I suppose the big news of this week on the continent has been the revelation of how much Lionel Messi earns on the four-year contract that he's seeing out the end of this season in Spain. Did it come as a surprise to either of you that he is by far earning more than any other footballer? David?
No, not at all. I think two reasons. It's Messi, so he's always, you know, other than Cristiano Ronaldo, he's always going to be paid the absolute best salary. And second, Barcelona, when it comes to bookkeeping and finances are absolutely ridiculous. So there was always going to be some silly contract. I suppose this was especially silly in terms of the number, but... yeah, it's not too much of a surprise, to be honest with you. If you have read and kept up with how things have been in Barcelona the past few years under the regime, what they've had there, then this is not too much of a surprise, I don't think.
I don't think it is either. And I think the sheer size of it is shocking. I don't think it can be any other way. And particularly the fact that it's leaked out in pandemic times. But the way that it was presented in El Mundo on the cover, of course, with the figure of 555 million euros over 4 years, and as the contract that is ruining Barcelona, it's clear that someone in the club, or possibly a presidential candidate, wants to send a message. And that message is that Messi can't be kept on. So to ready people for that. Now, of course, you've had one of the other candidates, or more than one of the other candidates, but for the presidency, but Victor Font, one of them, saying that Messi's worth every single euro that they've paid him. Personally, I don't agree with that whatsoever. But on the other hand, I do think, David, that he's symptomatic of a problem rather than the problem itself, because what's been the big thing, hasn't it, under Bartomeu, is the fact that you've got so many other players, and in the situation where they currently are, so many aging players who are still on long contracts and have been given exactly what they wanted. So if you go back to, say, look at another European super club, let's look at, say, Bayern Munich, for example. Toni Kroos, great player who went on to become an even better player for Real Madrid. But he asked to be given salary parity with Müller, Neuer, and the club, and Pep Guardiola said to him, we can't do that. I'm sorry, we can't pay everyone that sort of money. So he left for Real Madrid. And, you know, Bayern were criticised a little bit for that. But what's the alternative? You end up in Barcelona's situation where Busquets asks for 15 million a year and gets it. Jordi Alba, who, despite his very interesting role in the Copa del Rey win at Granada this week, and what a fantastic game that was, Jordi Alba asks for an extended contract to 2024 and gets it, despite the fact he's very much going down the Marcelo route, and that contract is going to look ugly by the end of it. And then you get players who are worth it, like Ter Stegen, who might be refused in a similar situation, but they're given what they want as well.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, just using your example, Bayern are a very, very well-run club. If they lose a particular player in a particular area of the pitch, then they are always assessing potential replacements, and they usually do buy very well. I don't think Barcelona are capable of that. So they are somewhat backed into a corner when it comes to these deals. I think they're very sympathetic towards the people, the players who have been loyal to them. But at the same time, I don't think they have the smarts to identify replacements for good prices and, you know, in terms of ability, in terms of skill set as well, in terms of purely matters on the field. So I think that's why these things happen, these deals that you see. With Messi, the thing is, if say they had sold him, say they had got his contract off the books, I wouldn't trust those guys at Barcelona with the money that would generate.
Exactly.
Where would they? You know that they would. Mm. They were, you know, they would piss that up the wall. That's what that's what they have done consistently for a number of years, and that is why the club is in the position that they are right now. The two things I don't think are mutually exclusive. You know, at the same time, Messi's contract can be over the top and too much, but at the same time, also you could say, Christ, they probably can't do any better in terms of spreading the cost out if they did get the money from him. So it's an interesting position that they have painted themselves into.
In the free market, though, you're only worth as much as somebody's prepared to pay for you. And what strikes me with this deal is arguably Messi is earning 20 times as much as, you know, some of his colleagues. Some of them might be on a better wedge than that, but still, if we take that figure, 20 times much more, somebody at Barcelona, I mean, how did it get to that point, for example? As much as Messi wants, or his agent wants to achieve as much money as possible, how does it get to 20 times the level of any other player? That suggests to me that there is some investigation to be done with whoever was responsible for that deal at Barcelona. Agent doesn't come in, does he, Andy, and sort of say, I want 20 times more than any other player. He might start with, you know, let's have twice as much. And then somebody else goes and says, I'll tell you what, we'll give you 20 times as much. That's madness.
Yeah, I don't think the proportions are really the issue here, Don, because I think if you look at the first Galactico period of Real Madrid, for example, the reason they could afford to pay Zidane, Beckham, Figo, etc., 6 million a year tax free, which is there's a lot of money in 2003, just to put that in perspective, was that the reason they were able to do that is because they had Ruben and they had Raul Bravo and players like that in their first team, players who were getting paid 150,000 a year. And of course, the club always pushed the line of, oh, well, it's really important to have these guys around who come up from the academy because they give Madrid its heart and its soul. And they actually teach the Galacticos about what Real Madrid means. But the fact is, it's simple financial balance. And you know, some of those players at the time were not good enough for Real Madrid. And they were there simply because it's a similar situation to the one that Paris Saint-Germain have at the moment. If you're paying Mbappe and Neymar, and from what we know this week, they're going to be paying Neymar again for the next 4 years, even more than they are at the moment. Something has to give somewhere else in the squad. You do end up with a kind of squad imbalance. The difficulty with Barcelona is that the fact is that 20 times that the next best player gets paid is an extraordinary amount, because what the next best player gets paid is an extraordinary amount. So it's the fact that you're in hock not just to Messi but to all those other players as well, and in some cases some of those players are aging very badly. We talked about Jordi Alba. Busquets signed his last contract in autumn 2018, and he's really not looked like the same player that he was under Pep Guardiola, and even since then under Luis Enrique for a lot of that time.
I think Rakitic was another one. Sorry, just to finish on this point, Rakitic was another one. If you look at that deal, they were clearly paying him far too much money. They had to essentially give him away at the end of the season just to try and get him off the books and create a little bit more leeway to
bring. That's what happened with Suarez. Yeah.
But this, I mean, Barcelona denying that they had anything to do with the disclosure to the press, and clearly Messi and his side don't disclose that to the press for whatever reason, because we know what the backlash has been like and they would have expected that. It's now apparently going to be a matter for the courts. And yet, when Barcelona played Bilbao, Atletico Bilbao at the, was it just a couple of days ago, actually, wasn't it?
Sunday.
When they played Athletic Bilbao on Sunday, it didn't look like Messi had the world's problems on his shoulders. In fact, he seemed to be enjoying his game and scored a remarkable goal when Bilbao tried everything in the book to try and stop him with that free kick. So are we seeing the real mood of Messi on the pitch, or is he putting on a show despite what he might feel about the exposure in the press of his earnings?
Yeah, I think he's excellent at whatever's happening off the pitch to ignore it, in a sense that, like, you know, the negativity. But at the same time, he seems to play with an added edge when there is turbulence off the field. He is very, very much the Michael Jordan meme constantly, and I took that personally. And on the field, he carries out to such an unbelievable manner, I think, when he feels wronged or when he feels there's a problem. So, but his performance never dissipates, I don't think, when there is troubles off the field.
Interestingly, he seems to be not just responding with prejudice, but almost sort of surgically cutting out all the criticisms that could be made of him. I think if you look in the Granada Cup game, he linked better with Antoine Griezmann than he has in a very, very long time. Because we've seen intermittently, when they click together, they really can click together. And it makes an enormous difference to Griezmann. And it would have made an enormous difference to his Barcelona career if they'd have worked perfectly the whole time along. And obviously it's easier to do that with Luis Suarez out of the picture. Now, I still tend to think Barcelona are going to finish a long way off winning La Liga this season, partly because of the Suarez thing. So it all goes back to this culture of paying players extraordinary amounts at Barcelona, because, as we were saying, they had to find a way to get shot of Suarez. But I still feel they're very much not the best team in La Liga. But they have played much, much better over the last month and a half, Barcelona. I just sense their defence will let them down at the crucial moments.
You know, the comparison with Michael Jordan, David, has really whetted my appetite for a Last Dance documentary on Lionel Messi sometime in the future. He's still got a bit of game between now and then, and the question must be now, where does he go to? It's made his future even more uncertain, because once you get a taste for I am worth 555 million euros, even if you're going to take a little bit of a pay cut, you know, where who can afford you at any price close to that? Where will he go?
I still think he will end up staying at Barcelona. I think he's in the best place here. For his career at this stage in his career, I think if he was going to make the big move to, say, the Premier League, then it's something he should have done a long, long time ago. I think he probably knows, despite his ability still being at an unbelievable level, of course, his fitness and his physique perhaps isn't ready for that right now. So I think, and his family are settled in Barcelona, he's got a great life there. I think it would be a real hindrance to him and his final years to go to the Premier League. So I think somehow, somewhere, they agree and Messi stays there for the rest of his career and sees it out. I just don't think anybody can bring him in. I think PSG is one of the names constantly linked, but like we say, Neymar's got a new deal. They seem to be planning elsewhere, I think, so they can't leverage the cash situation to stretch to Messi. I think Man City are going a different direction right now as well with their younger players. They'll look at the end of the day and say, okay, maybe a move for somebody like Haaland is more sensible at this stage. They've probably got Aguero to replace. So options are running out for Messi, and I think he will stay. And I think if that Last Dance documentary does get made, Ronaldinho and his years at Barcelona, he's definitely going to be the Dennis Rodman character.
So, ooh la la, here we go again, the ongoing saga of the French football's lack of a televised sponsor. Is it round 80? I don't know. Andy?
That's it. It's a tricky situation at the moment because, as you say, 80% of the rights were owned by MediaPro in what was a colossal deal. In fact, the sort of colossal deal that a cynic would have said in the first place, and Canal Plus are very much enjoying their I told you so role at the moment, would have said it's too good to be true, because it was going to pay the league 1.2 billion euros a year. And then obviously pretty quickly it fell apart when MediaPro said we can't pay it because of the pandemic. Well, this is what has caused a huge shadow over French football in the last little while, because now not only has someone got to come in and take up the slack, pick up this 80% of the rights, but Canal Plus, who were assumed as the most likely to come in and pick it up because they're the traditional broadcaster of Ligue 1, very much the equivalent of Sky in England or Germany, for example, they have made clear, A, they want value for money, and B, they want to make the league pay a little bit, I think, for cutting them off in the original negotiation in which MediaPro got the 80%, I think. So the difficulty at the moment is the league want to just, as soon as possible, obviously, get the 80% resold. They know they won't sell it for the same value, and all of the clubs collectively are going to take a bit of a beating because it's going to be an incredible cut in revenue from what they were expecting. But Canal Plus have not been playing ball the whole way. Part of that was when the 80% was put up and there was a tender in the last week for offers. And both Canal Plus and beIN Sport, who are the Qatari chain, who are also the owners of Paris Saint-Germain, who Canal Plus subcontract some of their share of the rights to, that they boycotted the call for offers because they said, well, hang on, if you're putting the 80% out there at a lower price, that means we've paid too much for our 20%, so we want to give them back. And the league said, well, you can't give them back. And they said, okay, well, we're boycotting the call for offers then. None of the offers from Amazon, DAZN, the new kids on the block, even got to the reserve price. So that leaves the league in a dreadful spot all over again, because they've since gone to Canal Plus and said, well, look, we can just have a private negotiation between us and you can tell us what you want to pay. They've said no to that as well. So basically it's going to go to court, then it's going to go out to tender again. And in the meantime, I think you look at some clubs, particularly in the bottom half in France, are going to be running out of money pretty quickly. I mean, there was a lot of focus on this, particularly because not only because time is short, not only because MediaPro's vehicle, Telefoot, whose journalists all know they're going to be out of work pretty soon or looking for work elsewhere, they're still broadcasting, despite the fact that everything's paid up. They paid their 100 million compensation fee to end the contract and the contract's over. They're still, because no one's taken up the other 80% of the rights, they're still broadcasting. And so there was a big question. Le Classique is on this Sunday between Marseille and Paris Saint-Germain, the biggest game in the French football calendar. And there's a big question over who's going to show it. Well, it turns out Telefoot are going to show it because they are still broadcasting jointly with, you guessed it, Canal Plus.
David, look, It sounds like a real dog's croissant, this. How hard can it be for a football league like the French League to not get an answer to their plea, voulez-vous coucher avec moi ce soir?
I think they fall into the category that several other leagues are in right now. I think it's very hard to drum up interest in the product when in some ways it's one-sided or it's lost value. You look in Spain as well, they've had issues attracting as well. And since Cristiano Ronaldo went, Messi's obviously going to go at some point when he retires or even before then. And I think you look at Ligue 1 and how they value their league. Neymar's new contract is going to help them a great deal. I think the fact that he stays around as long as Mbappe does. I think, you know, football is losing value in that sense. I think there's a lot of football being played. I think the quality is perhaps diminished as well. So I don't think the desire to pay these absurd fees is going to be there. And this is just a drop in the ocean, I think, for what's to come in the future with other leagues. I know the Ligas is up in a few years' time as well, and they're going to have to sort out their international rights. And it'll be interesting to see what the clamour will be for it. But I think this is going to be a problem all around Europe.
I think it's a really interesting point you make, David, about Neymar staying being a big deal, and Mbappe as well could be part of that. Because, you know, we think about the fact that we would like a balanced product, you know, for want of a better word, a genuine sporting competition. But I think there are a lot of people out there who don't feel that way, who don't feel the way that we do about that. They want to see dynasties. And they want to see dynasties, not just from teams, but from individual stars, I think. And you look at the way that the rise of Paris Saint-Germain has been perceived in France, particularly in the sporting press since the arrival of the Qataris. The arrival of Zlatan was a huge thing. There was no sense, really, of, you know, one team is bullying everyone else and ruining the league. And of course, we have to look back and say Monaco won the league in 2017 and Montpellier won it in 2012. So, you know, in that sense, even though Ligue 1 is something because of Paris Saint-Germain that people externally see as more one-sided than Serie A or the Bundesliga. Statistically, in terms of champions, it's not. It's simply not. Because, you know, you've got another title race this year as well, which is something that's been sadly lacking in those other countries. But Zlatan, starting with Zlatan, it was always seen as having a superstar that a French club couldn't have afforded before in the country was a huge boon to the way that Ligue 1 was seen internationally. And I think Neymar staying, as you say, is absolutely vital to that. With that said, I think you have to worry about the quality and the integrity of the competition going forward, simply because if it's left much longer and clubs, especially in the bottom third of Ligue 1, really start feeling it, it's going to end up really, really unbalanced. Although really the question is, what is going to happen to teams like Lyon, Marseille, Rennes financially in the short to medium term if they're starved of these TV funds?
Well, the other question is, how will all of this impact on the national team who've won the World Cup twice now? Remember, we've got European Championships coming up as well as World Cup at some point or other. It's bound to affect it one way or another, I would have thought, David. And also, what about us? If the French TV deals are going a certain way, whether to some of these technology companies, new technology companies, well, not new anymore, the likes of Amazon, then does that have a knock-on effect in our watching of the Premier League over here?
I think potentially. I think in regards to the French national team, I think this would actually boost them. I think more if clubs have less money, you know, they don't have the finances to play with, they're going to rely on what's in their youth academies. Usually, if you look across history, the money isn't taken out of the youth academies. When clubs loan money, they will invest more into it because they will see that's where they're going to get players from. So I think it could boost them in that sense. And then the big clubs will come in, pay a lot of money for those talents who have been pushed into the first team. So that's where, you know, they could be just more reliant on sales, which is never a good thing for the clubs itself. But who knows? It could give the spotlight to more younger players who come into the French national team. And if you look at the number of young players that have gone into it over the recent years, I mean, France could field maybe three teams of 11 deep of the talent that they have in every position. It's quite astounding. But I think in terms of the knock-on effect, then I think we've seen with the Premier League experiment, I think it was over the Christmas period, wasn't it? And then after games being on Amazon and such like that, I think it's just going to be the way forward, I think, in terms of the things they're doing. I think people really enjoy that experience of watching games as well.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
This week at Sukarnov.
Over at Self Care Club, wellness road tested, Lauren and Nicole discussed intuitive eating and rebelling against diet culture.
Actually, I'm really proud of myself that I did that because it was hard and it was bloody brave to actually stand up and say, you know what? I choose my life. I choose to have quality of life. I choose to be two dress sizes bigger and much fucking happier for it.
For even more great content, there's also a brand new episode of Between the Lines with Melissa Reddy, who sat down with Borussia Mönchengladbach's assistant manager, René Maric. He talked through his journey from a football blogger to coaching one of the most exciting football teams in Europe.
You always focus on the next game and you focus on every opponent, no matter which competition and the level of the opposition. You always focus on each opposition the same in terms of investment of time and resources.
All that and a whole lot more at Sukarnov.
Obrigado so far, gentlemen, and that will give you a clue as to where we're going next, to Portugal, where it looks like Sporting, who top of the league, well, they might be counting their chickens before they've hatched, Andy. Let's face it, Porto have got them in their sights.
They do, but Sporting of, I think you've got to underline how far they've outstripped expectation so far this season. I mean, here we are in February, and I realise it's an unusual season. They are still unbeaten, and they're 4 points in front of Porto, who are the title incumbents. But I think the key thing is, after winning the Lisbon derby on Monday night against Benfica in quite dramatic fashion, with Mateus Nunes scoring right at the end, they're 9 points in front of Benfica. Now, Benfica were always going to be the title favourites this season because they went out and spent an absolute fortune in the summer. They went big on bringing Jorge Jesus back to be their coach for a second spell from Flamengo, where he won the Copa Libertadores, of course. And then they gave Jesus a lot to pad out his squad. And they spent 80 million euros on transfer fees alone this summer. And that's before you get to contracts for the likes of Jan Vertonghen and Nicolas Otamendi. And paying players who've come out of the Premier League is not cheap by any stretch of the imagination. So it was always going to be that if Benfica didn't win the league, it's a massive failure. Now, we'll come to Benfica in a bit because I think we should concentrate on Sporting and what they've done right. Now, if you look to what Benfica tried to do, it wasn't just about the players. As I said, it was about bringing back Jorge Jesus. I think about a certain type of leadership, a certain type of football, and a bit of a flex as well to say that we can bring back a guy who's conquered the world on behalf of Portugal, which is a huge thing. If you look at all the headlines in the papers in Portugal this week about Abel winning the Copa Libertadores with Palmeiras, you know, the Portuguese people are immensely proud of their own going abroad and making a huge dent, which is why, you know, Jose Mourinho and Cristiano Ronaldo still lead the way for most Portuguese football fans. But it's all about the coach with Sporting, because right up until the point where they broke their transfer record this week by bringing in Paulinho, centre forward from Braga, and we'll come to him in a bit. I think he's a player who could push him over the top. Their coach, Ruben Amorim, who they brought in a year ago, cost more than any player they've ever bought. Just get your head around that, really. You know, that they paid a release fee for a coach, which was an absolute fortune, which was 12 million, which initially they couldn't pay. And they had to restructure a payment plan, much to the annoyance of Braga. But all that strife has been worth it, because Amorim's a winner. Interestingly, he played under Jorge Jesus, and he said he took a lot from him as well as other coaches. But Amorim, very much like Nuno, who's done so well at Wolves and, of course, got Valencia into the Champions League before, another Portuguese coach, we can talk about the production of different coaches from Portugal and how educated they are. But I think the interesting thing with Amorim, like Nuno, is he was a pro player of a high standard that didn't really play that much football, that spent a lot of time with injuries and as a squad player, like sort of in it, but not in it. So he was almost making the morph into being a coach before he was one. And I think he's had plenty of time to think about his ideas, about the philosophies of various coaches he's worked under. And what he's done with thus far a very limited budget until we get to the Paulinho signing has been absolutely extraordinary. They deserve to lead the league.
They may do, but David, if you were Sporting, given the length of time it's been since they last won the league, wouldn't you be looking over your shoulder, despite all the signings and the, you know, the results boding well? But they're only 4 points clear of Porto.
Yeah, absolutely. They've put a lot of effort into getting into the position that they are. But like you say, Porto's record itself is really, really good. Last 21 games, 18 wins, 2 draws, 1 loss. You know, that's pretty ridiculous when you look at what Porto have done. So I think we're going to move on to Paulinho. So I think this is the key thing. I think that signing is potentially the one to tip them over the edge. I know Ruben Amorim wanted Paulinho in earlier, but the club didn't do that. And then now they finally backed him. again, another signing, I think, if you look at his age as well, that, you know, is potentially goes against the grain of what Portuguese clubs are known by for, you know, bringing in young talents and developing them, moving them on. Whereas Paulinho feels very much a win now signing to get us over the to get them over the line, basically.
I think that's it, David, isn't it? They realise that this is their maybe one chance because it's such an unusual season and because of everything that's happened. But, you know, you talked about Porto's record in the last 20-odd games, which is fantastic. But I think the fact that Sporting is still 4 points in front of them then is something that's quite remarkable. I mean, Sergio Conceição has done an unbelievable job at Porto with budgets that are getting slashed all the time. To win the title twice in 3 years and to be on with the chance of a third and four is really amazing. But the development of those players at Sporting, a club that was in financial ruin, really going back year and a bit. Obviously, he's already won a trophy in the Taça da Liga, which that won the week before, as we previously mentioned on the pod, is really interesting. And then you look at that, they've always got young players coming through the academy, which they'll be able to sell down the line. Nuno Mendes, the left wing back, is absolutely terrific. There's a lot to be said for him. Then you look at Gonçalves, Pedro Gonçalves in or Pote in the midfield, who they brought in from Malacao and has scored a ton of goals this season. He's been absolutely magnificent from midfield. You've even got a bit of Manchester City interest with the wing back on the other side, Pedro Porro, who I know you've seen a lot of in Spain, David.
Yeah.
And he has been fantastic, scored the goal that won them the Taça da Liga. And I do sense that he won't ever end up back at Manchester City, that they'll simply use this to flog him on somewhere else. But, you know, he's making quite the brochure at the moment.
Yeah, I think he's a really, really good player. He really rose to prominence quite quickly in that Girona side. And yeah, I completely agree. It just doesn't look like he's got a future at City at all. And he'll end up like Angelino and probably end up in the Bundesliga somewhere. He'll do well there for a couple of years and then probably end up in the Premier League, but not at Man City.
How significant at the end of the season will this victory over their rivals Benfica a few days ago be? It wasn't as convincing as perhaps, you know, you might think. But having said that, there's a background to this as well, which is, you know, Jorge Jesus, the Benfica manager, being brought in, etc., Andy, that, you know, Benfica have got a lot of history and they needed to win that game, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. Like I said, if they don't win the league this season, especially with bringing back Jesus, especially with the money they've spent, it's an absolutely massive failure for them. You know, they've got so many options as well. Of course, they've been affected by coronavirus recently, but so have a few teams in Portugal. And, you know, this is not, if they don't win the championship, it's not going to be because they lost this game at Sporting. I wouldn't say that at all. But that they were in a position where they had to go and dig out a result in this game, I think is, you know, it says what a difficult season it's been so far. And, you know, when we talk about the four-point gap at the top, 4 points is quite a lot in Portugal because the big clubs don't really drop that many points. 9 points is an absolute chasm. And it would take something really quite spectacular for Benfica to go and dig it out from here. And, you know, they've paid a lot of money to bring in Jorge Jesus. They're paying him a lot of money in salary. They paid a lot of money in terms of transfer fees and players' wages to make sure he had what he wanted. And I kind of feel a little bit sorry for him because if you go right back to the start, the first competitive game is at PAOK in the Champions League. Now, because of the pandemic, the Champions League qualification ties were one-legged. So basically, they played okay. They slipped up against the run of play and went out of the Champions League. So already one of his stated aims to do well in the Champions League is just gone before the season has even started. And that's put an enormous amount of pressure on him. So that's really tough. I mean, on the other hand, I think when you get to later in the season, and I think one of the most disappointing bits of any European football for me this season was Jorge Jesus's, let's just say, racist comments, really, where he came out and said that too much was being made of alleged racist incidents, and you know, it's very much the fashion of the day, and he sounded every bit a late 60s man talking nonsense. That was so disappointing for a coach who's given so much joy with his football, who's been such an incredible character, to come out and say something like that. I mean, I feel disappointed as someone who has been an admirer of him, and I can't imagine what a black player who's played under him and has trusted his career to him must feel. But really, I think above and beyond all of that, all the credit goes to Amorim and Sporting, because bear in mind, you said it's been a long time for Sporting at Dotton. I mean, they've not won the league since Cristiano Ronaldo was there in 2002, back in the days when him and Ricardo Quaresma used to make ball tricks up in training. So it would be something absolutely colossal at the most unexpected time. And you've got to look not just at the tactical chops of Amorim, but the guts. We talked about Benfica having to go into that game and try and dig something out. Well, Sporting really dug it out, because as you say, it was a game with very little in it. And then you go back to the start of January when they had that game at Nacional in Madeira, where because of the wind and the rain, the game was called off on the Thursday. They had to wait there till the Friday to play it. And in absolutely horrendous conditions, they dug out a win there. So they can play good football. They can play winning football. I'm really interested to see where Amorim can go next and where he can take them next.
Well, as Cristiano Ronaldo would say in an Eric B and Rakim style, I shouldn't have left you. It's been a long time. It's been a long time. I shouldn't have left you without a strong rhyme to dance to. So it comes to that time, gentlemen, when we ask you to recommend a game of the week. An exciting point. Just one game, please, from each of you, of all the games that we could possibly see on our screens from Europe. David, do you want to go first?
Yeah, sure. My pick for game of the week this week is Real Betis versus Barcelona. It's on Sunday, 8 p.m. I think we're seeing two sides that have potentially turned a corner, putting together a run of form, looking a bit more in a rhythm, more like a unit. I think they earlier in the season, they looked very, you know, there was no really association between the players. The style was very unclear. I think since the new year, they're both kicking on. And I think it makes for a really, really intriguing game.
Not least if Barcelona get a free kick just outside the penalty area. Given the way that Messi took that free kick against Bilbao, how will Betis set up their defence against the free kick? Because it will be one of the highlights, I imagine, of the match. If they get a free kick in that area, it looks like it's going to go top corner, left or right, somewhere, no matter what they do.
Yeah, exactly. The newfangled trick of lying down on the floor behind the wall simply isn't going to do it.
Yeah, that's what I heard the commentator Steve Wilson memorably refer to as the draft excluder position last week. Yeah, that's very good, Steve.
Yeah, but you do look like a mug if you're the bloke lying down. And the ball goes over the wall and into the top right-hand corner. And they had a man on the line as well. So that will be a fascinating match to watch. Andy, you've got one for us as well.
Well, you know what? There are so many to pick from this weekend. There's some really great ones. I'm looking forward to the derby between Borussia Mönchengladbach and FC Köln on Saturday night. But the one, I think, has to be Juventus versus Roma. 5 o'clock on Saturday, and you can watch it for free from Live Score as well. It's going to be terrific because Juventus are starting to get their swagger back a little bit. I'm still not sure if it's enough for them to go and win the league. And I think they're a little bit fortunate in their Coppa Italia semi-first leg win Inter this week, in that Inter didn't play their best, and it still took them gifting Juventus a couple of goals for Juventus to take the win from that, even though there were great finishes by Cristiano Ronaldo. Roma drew 2-2 with Juventus and should have beaten them in the second game of the season at the Olimpico. And Roma are still up there. They're in third place, but they haven't beaten us, as Nicky pointed out to us a few weeks back. The reason you can't totally believe in Roma is because they haven't beaten any of the top sides so far. So they got that draw with Inter, they got that draw with Juve, but they've been absolutely welted by Atalanta. They got hammered by Lazio in the derby the other week, as we said. There's been this huge row between Paolo Fonseca, the coach, and Edin Dzeko, the captain, which almost precipitated Dzeko's departure. And they very possibly would have done a swap with Inter for Alexis Sanchez. And what a huge transfer that would have been, was it not for there being a tax situation with Alexis Sanchez being the beneficiary of a tax break, which Dzeko no longer is because he's been in the country for such a while. So the wages didn't match. So basically, Fonseca and Dzeko are going to find a way to patch it up. In the meantime, Roma have actually played pretty well. Borja Mayoral, who's on loan from Real Madrid, and another young player who Zinedine Zidane isn't really getting the best out of, has looked really good since he stood in for Dzeko. So I feel it's quite a big test for Juventus, but it's a really big test for Roma as well, because if they're going to finish in that top four, at which point, interestingly, Fonseca's contract would be automatically extended by a year if they did make the top four. It'd be interesting to see if they are for real and they can finish in the Champions League places.
This was a Stakhanov production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.